Welcome to Medscape. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Wilner, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Oren Miron, a research associate in biomedical informatics at Harvard University and the winner of the 2017 Next Einstein competition. Welcome, Dr. Miron.
Thank you very much.
Oren, I watched a couple of your video presentations where you talked about a tool for the early detection of autism. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So we basically use the hearing test that's done on every newborn to detect hearing impairment called the auditory brainstem response, and we modified it so it also detects autism. We did that by looking back at the databases, getting thousands of brain tests, and checking who today has autism. And basically what we found is that while children with hearing impairment do not have a stable response in this test, children with autism tend to have a delayed response in this test. So we found that's a great predictor, and we published two studies now. And we're now trying to develop it enough so we can take that prediction and add it to those hearing tests so that you basically turn those 4 million hearing tests a year into 4 million autism tests. And so our hope is that that would allow, together with other risk factors and together with obviously the eventually a more full and comprehensive behavioral diagnosis, to get that earlier validation of the autism, maybe at age 2 years, maybe at age 3 years, but earlier than what we can now at 4 years, and get earlier treatment that has better results.
When I watched your video, which was great, by the way, I realized that you were talking about brainstem auditory evoked responses. And I mean, back when I was a resident, I wrote a chapter on BAERs, and we used to use them a lot in our practice, and occasionally we'll use it now, but I know that they are used regularly, usually sort of for the opposite, a child who's not behaving properly, not developing properly. They use them to check, to make sure they can hear, because obviously if you can't hear, you can't see, very difficult to interact with your environment. So it's a way of ruling out sort of organicity and saying, well, they can hear, they can see, but they're not behaving. Maybe it's going to be autism. But you've kind of turned that on its head, and you're saying that there are patterns in the BAER that suggest autism. So my big question there was, I was always under the impression that autism is probably some wiring issue of the cortex, that it was a cortical disease. But BAERs are, they're a brainstem test. So tell me about that. What's the thinking there?
So yeah, I was surprised too, because, you know, when I first started learning, everybody talking about, oh, always focus on the prefrontal cortex, the newer the cortex, the better. But then when I looked at the literature, I saw that there has been studies dating from the 70s, and we actually just published a meta-analysis. So dozens of studies that found this prolongation in children with autism, and they did it around the time when people were writing about ABR and researching ABR, the ones you talked about. And at some point, they understood it so well that they started using it to screen hearing impairment, not just, they didn't just use it for those with a little bit of problems, but they're now using it on every baby in most of the U.S. hospitals. And so what I just said is, hey, if it happens in children with autism, why don't we also check it in the newborns? And that proved to be successful. So I definitely built on the work they did, and I'm very grateful for them, especially Professor Haim Sommer, who not only found for the first time the abnormality of autism in ABR, he also invented the ABR device. So I'm a big fan of his. So I'm just standing in their shadow. So that's what we're doing. And yeah, and just also to mention, you know, we've been developing it for a while now, and now we went into MIT Solve, and we just got selected as a solver. And that gave us a lot of ways to spread, especially to developing countries, because it's a very global organization. One of the things that I really care about this test is that it's very inexpensive. You come, you give a click, and 5 minutes afterwards, the baby goes back and you know if he hears. And that's why this test is rapidly expanding to developing countries where autism is never even diagnosed. So if we can reach, use this test to help detect autism in those countries, that would be phenomenal. And yeah, because, you know, MRI is amazing, you know, and it understands the cortex perfectly, and we can definitely work with MRI. But the problem is you can't really use MRI on every baby, because it's a $1 million device that's the size of, you know, bigger than this room I'm in, and takes a lot of expertise. And, you know, in southern Israel, where I started this test, you know, we had big lines for MRI. You know, we had one MRI for 1 million people, and, you know, people waiting in lines and coming at 3 a.m. for a test. How are we going to do that for every baby? So it all really stemmed from my wanting to make a test that's going to be affordable for everyone. Because if I, you know, I mentored kids with autism, if their families couldn't afford this test, then what am I doing here?
Now, you mentioned MRI. As far as I know, there are not MRI criteria for the diagnosis of autism. Although every now and then I read a paper where there's this abnormality, there's that structural, you know, that there are these. So are you looking at that? In other words, now that you have a data set, you know, you can identify patients, are people saying, okay, this baby is very likely to have autism? When the baby becomes older, are you going to pair that with imaging studies to see, is there a structural abnormality that, you know, that's visible? Is that coming up?
That's something that we're very interested in, and we're now in contact with. We think those studies are very promising. The difficulty is that they've been done mostly on siblings, right? Because you don't know who's autistic and who's not. So you have to dose with a lot of risk to get a sample size of 10 and 20 or whatever. But with our test, if we could detect those in risk and start following them with MRI, we'll have a much better understanding. And connecting to what you asked about the central system versus the lower system, the studies show definitely a cortical problem, but, you know, the cortex mature later on. If you want to detect it early, you want to go to what matures early. And those studies do suggest a problem in the brainstem and in the entire lower part of the brain. Again, some studies show this and some studies show that, especially in autism with the heterogeneity and the changes over time. It's very hard to find consistency, but there is a very good basis for it. We aren't sure yet what causes it. For us, the main thing is to get early, you know, prediction of risk and helping the kids. If it's astrology, I don't care, as long as it predicts.
Well, that was another sort of technical question. You mentioned heterogeneity. I mean, we talk about autistic spectrum disorders. So mm-hmm. when you looked at your waveforms and you said, what was your gold standard for saying, aha, this is autism, this isn't autism? You know, what did you use as a standard since it's such a wide clinical diagnosis?
Yes. So we used, obviously, we were based on the diagnosis that the experts made. We didn't do the diagnosis ourselves. It's a retrospective study. So one of the thing is, you know, relying on, you know, there's no biases of, am I going to give this kid a diagnosis or not? It's just the entire birth cohort from the hospital and the entire diagnosis from the autism center. And we do find that there's a subgroup that around 70% that very well defines in the ABR. And again, we're now developing other markers that might detect the other 30 in some different fashions. And it's still, we're keep getting better at it. But it seems that there's like a big subgroup and that we want to focus on. And because autism is so, you know, heterogeneous, there will... unfortunately, probably going to be groups that we can detect. Like if you take Rett syndrome, for example, that used to be considered as part of autism, and we don't find too many ways to connect that with the larger group. There's probably a lot more of these tiny groups, but we think that when we are able to cut out those 70%, we'll be able to better understand and start treating the other 30%, because we'll know that they're different. We'll find maybe more Rett syndrome and fragile X.
So some of them really are false negatives. The reason that they're negative is because they're phenotypically autism, but they're really a different pathophysiology.
Yes.
So that I think is a huge breakthrough. Now I'm trying to remember, you know, in that chapter I wrote about 30 years ago about BAR. So, I mean, I tell me which wave, you know, which of the five waves, or is it some combination?
Oh, yeah.
What was abnormal?
So the main thing we focused on is the fifth wave, which is, you know, the gold standard of, you know, the highest part, which is, we also like to go as higher as possible, you know, and the fifth wave is, you know.
So we're in the brain stem around the inferior colliculus, something like that.
Yeah, the meniscus, so we're trying to reach that, and now we're trying to reach higher because, you know, the ABR has a wealth of knowledge, and we're trying to do more. But obviously, the more participants we have, the more we can combine different measures. We were very careful not to overfit the data. Because, you know, having thousands of participants sounds good, but because, you know, only 1% or so of them will be autistic, you know, you gotta be very careful in these analyses, and especially because we say there's so many subgroups. If we're aiming of those, you know, let's say 50 or 100 or more cases to only look at like half, again, you don't want to overfit them with, you know, 10 markers. You know, we always say that, you know, you can predict autism based on social security number if you just have enough of those.
So is it a prolongation of wave five? There's an increase in the latency, or is it an amplitude issue?
It's a prolongation.
Prolongation. Okay. And so, I mean, the ideal study, of course, is going to be one that's going to take you through the next 5 years, right? You're going to do a prognostic study. Can you get that together? I know that's a tough, big challenge.
Oh, yes. We're developing that. And also that's going to give us a lot more control. But I have to say, I'm a really big fan of retrospective studies, especially now that I'm developing a prospective study, and the bureaucracy and the funding. And, you know, it's like, you know, because, you know, we're getting studies of hundreds of thousands of patients. And, you know, now it's like, how much does this $50,000 get us? Oh, you know, 100 participants. It's like,
right. That'll pay for the consent forms.
Exactly. And you know, the IRBs are, you know, a lot stricter now. So I definitely recommend all of the listeners to explore this test and similar tests. I'm here in biomedical informatics with under the supervision of Isaac Kohane. He's founded the department. He always says, you know, make the data work for us. You know, why collect data, you know, on 100 patients, $50,000, if you haven't looked yet at the 50,000 and 100,000. We should do both, but it saves so much money and time and energy and focuses you to start with the existing data. So it's really like our goal was like, because it seemed kind of crazy at first to say, oh, we're going to detect autism at birth. But, you know, I said to myself, you know, if it's an existing data, you know, I'm just wasting my time. I'm not wasting anybody's money to check it. And thankfully, it turned out. And now with MIT Solve, we're trying to push it forward to implementation. And, you know, I'm very, you know, I'm looking forward to helping, you know, especially, you know, this has already been done on, you know, 98% of the population in the U.S. So,
Oren, I want to. I'm going to cut you off there because we're out of time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I want to thank you. I want to wish you luck, and I want to I want to talk to you again in 5 years or maybe sooner when we have the results of that prognostic study, because I think it is a wonderful opportunity to diagnose and potentially help children with autism.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the opportunity and have a wonderful day.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Andrew Wilner reporting for Medscape.